I think her description of a home here is excellent in terms of what a home is and does. But I also think that we have to realize that in today's world, homes are not just the product of the male of the species. That is, not just the female of the species, the male and the female species together make the home. That is, they weave it together. It's a real tapestry of a home that's not just the private job of the woman. And I think it's true that many women from my generation are almost ultra possessive of what women do in the home. At least I am. I had a hard time in prison camp letting Carol wash mom's diapers, for instance, when I was sick. I thought it was wrong for men to have to do it. Even in prison camp, I thought that. You know, where we were all really, you know, kind of on an even basis. But I still felt, you know, that somehow there was something demeaning for him to do that. That was something I should do. Now, you know, I've been a liberated woman for years. I fought to be president of our senior class when I was in high school in Minneapolis. That was 45, 50 years ago. And I remember our counselor told me, you might be the best president we have, but she said, you'll never get it because men vote for men and women vote for men, Mary. You know, you can run the campaign as hard as you want to, and we had a campaign. But I'm saying that's the way I was on the outside. But inside, when I got into a prison camp, how did I act? I reverted to type completely and said, oh, I can't have you wash those diapers, you know. That's my job. Well, you know, if you see what I mean, that funny kind of a twist you get into because you think that there's something specific about the kinds of jobs men and women do. This isn't really true. There are some things we're not able to do physically, and I think it's silly to put yourself into a position where you're going to have to be excused because you're a woman. Don't do things that get you into that situation where physically you can't handle them. Although we did have some girls up here one year that really handled the garbage better than any guy ever did and really collected it and one of them, and I remember, remember Angela did a huge job. What was she doing, Stuffy? Wasn't she, weren't they doing, turning over,
compost?
Yeah, and also when they were digging out, doing some digging with the backhoe, and she ran it. So I can't even say that there's something, you know, you shouldn't get into because men will, you know, put you down because you're not able to do it. Some women can. So there's no holds barred, maybe. But I think that it's important that you also realize that you don't get so busy being a liberated woman that you deny something that you're good at. If liberation, and this isn't liberation theology, this is liberation psychology. If the liberation of women means anything, it does mean that we are able, as men and women, to choose and feel free to choose to do certain things and not feel that we are going to be put down because we've chosen to do it. There was a time during the women's lib movement when if you really enjoyed being a homemaker and reading that in terms of all its ramifications, you felt that you really almost had to apologize for it because you weren't doing something else. Now I think that it's much more clear that the way has been cleared and paved for people to make choices, both men and women, and to be able to live in a much freer, fuller way and not feel apologetic about the position that they take about things. And I think this is extremely important to remember so that you don't get into the situation as a woman of feeling like, well, I would like to stay home, but I don't think I should because I really am liberated and I have to prove it. And it's much more important that you do that which is really essential to you, unless it's necessary for you to go out of the home to work. But I mean that you do what is yours to do. The one thing I think that's very important, though, and something that I feel is important for both men and women in terms of understanding their masculinity and their femininity, is that they understand the combination with which this balance can be lived through, and that you know that life is never going to be all that easy. It's not going to be, there's always going to be, as Lord Scott Maxwell says in the beginning of this book, the pain of growth is going to be there, and there's always going to be also the pain of adjustment with this thought life and feeling life, whether you are a man or a woman. You're going to have that kind of conflict and adjustment continually in your makeup and in your life. But I think the one thing that has been possible to women, not all women have made use of it, but it has been a possibility for women, and that is that there has been a possibility for many of them to live a life somewhere along the way that affirms the quality of being instead of doing. Now you might say, well, you know, women are always doing a whole bunch of little stuff all the time. Well, it's true. They are. They're doing, most mothers in families are continually doing a lot of things, but they're not the kinds of things that people look at and say, you know, that was a real accomplishment, because you know what happens, it has to be done again the next day, or, you know, twice, three, four times the same day. So then it's not the doing of a thing, but it's the quality of being in terms of life itself. And that was, there is a possibility for women who live in homes to develop this, because of the fact that they had a little more privacy, I think, than the average woman who worked outside the home or the average man who worked outside the home. And I think if there's any quality that is needed in our life today, in our society, it is that quality of life that emphasizes being rather than doing. And it doesn't mean that you're not going to be doing good work, which Dorothy Sayers is very concerned about, that we do have, you know, the sense of work done well. This is primary. But that there also is in our lives a kind of a spirit of understanding that life is more than even Dorothy Sayers, and I will have to say that I will have to disagree somewhat with her there, even if I do respect most of her opinions, that it isn't just in work, but there also is the person who infuses the work with the nature of his or herself. And I'm going to read a quote from one of my favorite authors, Willa Cather, who is one of the greatest, I think, one of the greatest women authors, and I think she's one of the greatest American authors we've had. I don't know how many of you read her, but I think she'll be coming back into popularity again. She wrote Death Comes to the Archbishop, she wrote My Antonia, she wrote Shadows on the Rock. She writes marvelous books about the early days in America, not just the United States, but also in Canada, which Shadows on the Rock was about. And this is what she says, and I think that this is true. It isn't just the moral excellence with which you live a life, but there is the quality of the valuing of life itself. The valuing of life itself. You know, a real understanding that life has a value that you put into it as you live it and as you see it and as you relate to it. That it isn't just a matter of morality. It's goes almost deeper than that.
Can you read that again, Mary?
Well, that a virtue that is not so much moral excellence as it is a valuing of life. And the person who is writing about Willa Cather says, "Her monumental characters are just that, monuments like churches to which people go to be told about the potential of the human spirit and about realizable goals of virtue and strength." And I think that this is a quality that I think is a possibility for men and women in today's world who see this whole breakout of this liberation of sex and race and nation, and we don't lose ourselves in the movements or the activities, that we lose the quality of being that is essential if life is really to be lived on this planet. Pardon me? Right, yeah, that's true. Now I'm through, and I would like to say that if any of you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them. I haven't by any means probed the whole subject, nor have I gone through the whole book. I really didn't want to take quite so long today on this because I thought that perhaps you might need time to ask about things, or if there are things that were not clear, I'll be glad to go back over it again. Well, I think that's true. How many of you have ever thought of that? Maybe you haven't had to argue with men that you have been broken down in tears in the process because well, that's all right, John. But I think it is true. When I was in college, it used to bother me so much that the men used to have what we called bull sessions, and the guys would talk, you know, until 2-3 o'clock in the morning about arguing about socialism or what have you, and I don't know, the girls never did, and this really used to upset me, and I didn't think about it, but I think that it is true that if you don't have a chance to talk out your ideas somewhat, whatever they are, I mean, you don't have to be on great big heavy abstractions, just discussing something, not as a woman and a man, but as two human beings who are, I mean, of course there's a mixture there, of course there's a there's a tone that's going to be different from what a woman says and what a man says in certain points because of the difference in a particular personality and the way in which she affects the man or the man affects her or what have you. But there has to be an interchange with these of conversations so that you can practice it a little bit. It's somebody said it's hard to know what you think until you've said it. Mm-hmm. And it's true that a lot of times you don't. What?
Turnies.
Well, it was my college president said it years before turnies. He said, "I don't know what I think till I've said it." But it isn't true of everything, you know, because you do think some things in yourself, inside of yourself. But I think this is true that we do need to feel that we can talk things out sometimes and not feel. She doesn't talk very much about that because she's so, most of her book is women, it's just sometimes men, and she is involved in trying to understand the position that women have and the problem that they're in, and the reason that she thinks it's important for men to be aware of this is that men are human beings in the same world that women are human beings, and we belong together, and we're going to become more and more related to each other on a one-to-one basis. It's not going to be in the traditional places anymore. And for men to feel that just because it's always been one way, that settles the question for them, you know, that's not true. But I don't think that she doesn't talk, she talks more about marriage and about individuals as solitary people and so on than about, I don't think she talks about fathers particularly. Probably because she's very concerned about the fact that the role playing is something that you're going to have to realize is not exactly what it's always been, and that fathers and mothers very often will exchange roles, and so she talks about the mother as something that's disappearing, you know, kind of going away as a peculiar, unique role. I guess I would say that, as I said before, that I still think that there has to be some of that, I think there's got to be some, it's important to have both fathers and mothers in a home if possible. But I think that in today's world, if we're going to be realistic, we know that there are many, many homes where this is not the case. And where sometimes the mother has to be both the father and the mother, or the father has to be. And perhaps what she's saying is a help there too. Is there any? Do you think that she is? Do you think she's fair? Of course, you haven't read the whole thing, but do you think that she's that her analysis of this is fair? Do you think that she makes too much of this masculine and feminine side of men and women, that is, of each human being has this combination? I think she puts too much weight on this.
That's Jungian.
Yes, it's a Jungian concept, but it is fairly accepted by most psychologists in today's world. Not just, you know, they may not go along with anything else he did, but they do accept that particular point.
I think as long as she deals with the two, you know, not that you would try in some way within yourself to make a division of
what
characteristics
that's
are with
very important
in the context of the close person.
Yeah. That's a good point, Debbie, because I think that if you get so introspective that you start, you know, calling your masculine by one name and your feminine by the other, you're going to really feel like you're a double person. And it's not, a completely social, it's not a physical thing at all. But it's a psychological phenomenon, but it is something that's very, very important that you don't try to make so much of it that you become so self-conscious about it that it gets to be a real, you know, it gets to be such a thing. You can't be a free person. It ought to be a freeing thing, in other words. And if it's something that haunts you, you know, then for goodness sakes, it's not, you're giving it the wrong kind of importance. See? It's not that kind of thing. But it is something to recognize, and I think what she says about this, I think we've noticed up here, for instance, many of the people who've come up here on the staff over the years, people have had real problems. A lot of them have had problems because they've had mothers who, you know, fit that description perfectly of this woman who was a cascade of emotional, you know, feeling and warmth and so on, but was really smothering the children in the family. And many of the most rebellious people in the 60s up here were people who'd had real problems with their parents, especially with their mothers that way. Because mothers who had not been able to admit that it was possible, you know, it was perfectly all right to think and to read and to speak with some intelligence about issues. And so all of their masculinity and aggressiveness went into this kind of a reverse feminism that was really bad. And I'm sure you know people like that. It's not, you know, we're not that far away from anybody's neighborhood.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
When you were talking about if a woman had a job and got married,
mm-hmm.
and I mean to fit into, you know, like if she hadn't been trained out or something, like she wouldn't fit into the role. But one time Barb and I talked to John,
mm-hmm.
and he was talking about, I'm not sure I understand it now, but he was talking about roles, and then men and women have them, and they may not be best suited for it,
mm-hmm.
but that way you can come together and meet.
Right.
That's a good point. How does it fit together?
This does fit because of the fact that from the point of view that if you do not have a psychology of success going for you all the time, that you feel like, you know, I'm marrying a man or a woman. I'm marrying a man who can provide me with everything. I'm marrying a woman who can make a wonderful home, should be a wonderful homemaker. You know, those two, that's your identification of the person that you want to live with. And that's not the image you have. But you have an image of, she's a chemist, you know. I don't know if she really wants to cook or if she wants to be at home all that much. Maybe the man you fall in love with, you know, he doesn't have a job, and you know, I don't know what we're going to do. I'll have to support him, maybe. You know. Okay. Well, that's your situation, and you don't have to make. That does not mean that your marriage is falling to pieces because of that. Because what John was talking about on the idea of weakness is that a home is not made by the successful image of each person coming together and producing it. It's because very often when there are weaknesses on the part of one or the other, you get together and you build each other up and you work it out and remarkable things take place to produce a far better home than one that would look like, you know, it was the best suburban home in the block and every child in it was on drugs and miserable. I mean, I know one family exactly like that, but in not right outside of Minneapolis, in one of the big suburbs here. And, you know, looks like the greatest success, and yet absolutely nothing. I mean, they when you admit your weakness to each other, you're not pretending, something can happen. Something real happens. And I think this is what does that help to explain some of that to you,
mm-hmm.
the relationship? Because if it doesn't, I'll go on, you know, we can...
John?
Yeah?
Were you saying, like, that there are certain roles for men and women, and that even though maybe the man could better fill the woman's role, the woman does it because that is her role, but that she can't... Is that what you're saying to us, Tom?
No.
At least you can answer,
because
I went to
bed.
What I was thinking of was in the relationship to...
I hope that is not
Kate. What are you talking about? You know, order and clarity and all that kind of statements that we can't just keep for ourselves. I can't maybe we'll get into talking more about specifically about men, specifically about women. But that sense of just allowing a certain order to start with. I'm not a good mother. I'm not a good mother. I fail in the life of
And by confessing the Lord, I've never found, and confessing that first for my own self, but possibly the one person who's doing everything, then hopefully that would be the best one. Then I have a question about person too, to be weak. I don't think that if we were working on our own salvation, our own goals, our own idea, I'm going to be my kind of woman, this kind of man, without any chance of carrying on the race. I don't know if I
Well, I think the one thing that you have to remember, and that is that I think maybe what Chris was mentioning too was the fact that supposing that, I mean, should you say that I really don't care at all about living at home. I want to work outside the home all the time, and maybe your husband wants to work outside the home too. Well, then what do you do? Who does what at in the home? Well, that there you definitely make an arrangement, you know, and you divide up the chores and you figure it out. Maybe a husband has work that keeps him at home, and the work that the wife does has to be outside. Maybe she does lab work. She has to be outside the home. There again, you know, this isn't necessarily a weakness. This is a matter of difference in personality and in the way in which you do things. It doesn't mean that any more than if there are some things that always have to be done, whether you're married or whether you're living by yourself or with a roommate, something has to be done. Storm windows have to be changed. Some things have to be done that require physical labor, and you've always relegated that to the man. Man, that's a man's job. Now, that is not always the case. I mean, there are some jobs that can be done by both, and this is also true in reverse. There are some jobs that were always thought to be women's, just as I said with this washing of clothes thing. I mean, men can wash clothes just as well as women can. I mean, the roles of men and women don't have to be so carefully defined in terms of caring for houses and households and places of living. I think there is more, perhaps there is a little more of that in the emotional role of the, for instance, if you have children, that there is an emotional role with a mother and a child, but there also is an emotional role with a father and a child. So, submissive? No, I just couldn't hear what the submissiveness was about. I think it's true that we, you know, we sometimes have to take everybody takes a second place at times. I think things have to be decided individually, John.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think that this is, I mean, I think that we cannot project what society is going to be, just as you said, things have changed so fast, and this is why Florence Scott-Mansfield said, you know, according to Jung, woman stands at a real brink, and that was way back in the 20s. And I just thought what Dorothy Sears says here, I believe, is absolutely true. And I think that we may not like the world the way it is, with the roles changed and twitched and moved, but we are not going to determine how the world is going to move. It's moving in that direction. And we had better be able to meet that and understand how to live in the kind of role of a world in which the two roles are going to be interchanged constantly. I mean, you generation is out of it. You know, you're already in another world somewhere. You should be. And so there, I don't mean you're out of it. Of the latitude, of the latitude. But what I'm now
just try it in some ways for my benefit is what you talked about yesterday. My whole relationship to everything I'm listening to is a question.
Yes, I know, but now just a minute, I'm going to read this part from Dorothy Sears because I think this is very much to the point. In reaction against the age-old slogan, woman is the weaker vessel, or the still more offensive, woman is a divine creature, we have, I think, allowed ourselves to just into asserting that a woman is as good as man. I think one thing here is that these are none of the value judgments that you make. I mean, that we make either on the role we play, or that what you said, Elise, about feeling that you make judgments on yourself because you feel like you don't really measure up to sort of a classic idea of the homemaker.
Why is there a advantage to the world and not to individuals?
What do you mean?
In what sense do you use that whole, you talked about yesterday,
Mm-hmm.
A norm is necessary. Mm-hmm. Where do we get it? Where do we? I am not going to choose no one from my society.
No.
I can't help being safe in my acceptance
and
rejection of them. But if that is all I've got, then I'm on a scale now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I resist. I mean, I don't like to be interpreted. I'm like, I'm saying we're done.
Yeah.
And so here, I'm sorry, that's...
No,
this is outdated.
No, but what I mean by that, Elise, is that no, but I think it's pretty low blow. No, but what I meant was that this whole, I was thinking of it in terms of the interchange of roles.
That's a different thing. I do not
interchange.
I don't become a husband.
No.
So that, okay. So this is for each of us, when we marry,
mm-hmm.
we carry a definition of what life is, or husband
is. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that, I don't care, I'm not trying to make a definition for everybody, but I think it's true that you have one. That you have some concept of that relationship when you marry. Otherwise, die married.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, I said that you have a different, each person comes into a marriage with a concept. That's what I'm talking about as well. I hope I didn't give any... These are the things that my idea of role is doing diapers or not doing diapers or walking all these and that one.
Well, I was thinking, I really was thinking more in terms of the physical structure of whether you stay in a home or stay outside of it as a husband and wife.
See, that's part of what you carry into it yourself.
Yeah, well, that's what I said was an individual thing.
This man, that is something that's very difficult for them to work with. And, whatever society says, whether society is great or not,
mm-hmm.
that's their situation.
That's where I see it. It's something you battle out ahead of time, and why you have to face it before you enter into it, simply because you don't just suddenly fall into something and then hope it's going to work out right.
You have to have a sense of life or something,
or
whatever you want to call archetypal role.
I thought the question was much more involved in the actual...
Whether you can work out...
Well, and actually, if the man were much more related to being at home and doing his work at home, and the woman was doing work outside home, does that change the actual role of wife and husband?